Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin? And how did they end? Let's find out on this episode, Fan of History. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Bernie.
Ready for six battles and one murder?
Yes, but I have something to cover first.
Okay.
You and I have grown closer since last episode.
Okay.
Because we are now both members of the same military alliance, Sweden. After 215 years of neutrality, has now entered NATO.
Oh, it's official. I didn't know that it was finally official.
Yeah, the last formalities are being gone through while we record this. But when this episode is out, we have either joined NATO or been nuked to dust by the Russians.
I know. If Trump wins, he's going to do what the heck? They don't pay their bills.
He hasn't won yet, right?
So no.
We have to wait until January to
Let's just hope none of that nonsense doesn't happen, honestly. I love that. He says people don't pay their bills, as if like NATO has like a bill. Here's your bill.
We are paying those bills because we are right next to our possible adversary.
I know.
And we expect to be a transit land for the defense of the Baltic countries and Finland.
Amazing.
So right now, a great infra works, what do you say? Like great projects are getting started to enable the Swedish roads to transport all the NATO tanks and stuff.
Isn't it funny, though? Don't you wonder, like, what's the point? Like, if there's a big war, it's just, how are they going to keep it from getting nuclear? I don't know. I don't even want to think about it.
I hope there will be no great war. But yeah. When I speak about 215 years ago, it's the year of the Lord, 1809. And in that year, we actually fought the Russians for the 20th time or something. And they kicked our asses so hard. So we lost Finland to them.
Oh.
Fortunately, Finland liberated themselves after the end of World War I, or during the end of World War I when Russia fell during the revolution. But we haven't fought anybody since losing Finland. But after losing Finland, we somehow managed to steal Norway.
Oh.
So we did have Norway for about 100 years until they voted to leave us. And we let them go. And then they found oil. Terrible mistake. Now we can't attack Norway because they are also in NATO.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't think you guys want to attack Norway. You're not to that level.
They have oil, right?
That's true, though. Hey, if it gets bad, who knows, with a couple generations of Swedes from now, maybe you'll be like Vikings again.
But do you know which country Sweden has had the most war with?
I think you told me before. Was it Russia?
No. Russia is maybe the second on this list, but we had far more wars with another country.
Denmark?
Yes.
Yeah, Denmark. Freaking Danes.
There is a video on the Stockholm Bloodbath in on the Fan of History YouTube channel, and now I've done 4 huge episodes on it in my mass murder podcast in Swedish. But the Stockholm Bloodbath is a massacre in Stockholm in 1520, where the Danish king basically cuts the heads of the entire Swedish nobility.
Wow.
Because they didn't support him. And then the Danes actually kicked the king out. But that's another story. Let's go back to China.
Yeah, see, everybody's got crazy history.
Oh, yes.
Just like in China. Yeah, so where are we? We're in 548 BC. Spring and autumn period, China. Listen to the last episode. I gave you the background on some of that again. It's the 25th year of the Duke. He's getting older. Like we said the last episode, there are 6 battles and 1 murder out of 10 things on the list. And, oh, the other ones, so like the other 3 things were basically to plan battles. So there's a lot of war going on right now. A lot of battles. Queasy, that's the guy. I know I keep talking about him. He's already dead because he dies soon, we know. But from Qi, he led a force and attacked our northern borders, meaning Lu. So Qi is like, you know, attacking people. And this is when he murdered his ruler, right? And so 548, Queasy murders the ruler. That's why he says murders him, but, you know, it was an accident during the fight over his wife.
Yeah, because the ruler had an affair with his wife.
Right, because of Tang.
And then accident.
And then an accident, yes. Like ninjas I see going into the cat, you know, to take her and then a fight. Ah! And then another thing happened. This is the somebody from, so Zhang led a force and entered the capital of Chang. So even Zhang's a small state. They're still fighting. Oh, the reason I left this in there, because there's a whole story. I won't go into it. But he says, they remark, of all the entrances into cities or states mentioned in this, in the whole thing, there is none where the hostilities were conducted so courteously by these people. They were like, oh, would you like to wait outside? It was like a whole thing. Like once they came in and won, it was very, very courteous. So that's one of the things they say about the spring and autumn period, that the battles and things were more gentlemanly and courteous. And I think maybe that's why there is so many, because it's not like total war going on all the time where they're like, you know, destroying all the peasants' food and killing everybody and, you know, poisoning the wells. More like a bunch of guys get together and fight it out.
So it's polite fighting.
But that's what they say in the spring and autumn period. But again, that could be, you know, wish I wouldn't like polite fighting. I did a little polite sparring last night with some of the kids, and that was as polite as I like it to be. I don't get stabbed or anything.
I see.
Yeah. Another one I kept in here is another force. So Chu led a force and extinguished this little state called Shuju. And they says it was the last of the Shu states, which Chu had allowed to maintain a sort of half independence. The extinction of it here is that's the end of this is a small people, one of the states. These small states were apparently Shu states. I looked it up. It's not super interesting. I'll leave it in the notes if anybody wants to see it.
So forget the Shuju state that just got wiped out.
Yeah, they're extinguished.
Politely.
Now, remember Chu invaded Wu because of the naval thing?
Yeah.
So the next year, Wu invades Chu.
Payback.
And he died. The Viscount, which is the main duke, right? He died on an attack of one of the gates of the city in Chu. So here's the story of it. Yeah, so they invaded him because of the naval, in return for the naval expedition. He attacked one of the gates, and this one guy's name is Nui Chen of that place said, "The king of Wu is daring and reckless. If we open the gate, he will attack it himself, and I shall have the opportunity to shoot him dead. Let him once die, and our boundaries will have a little rest." It says his advice was taken. The Viscount attacked the gate, and then Nui Chen shot him from behind a low wall so that he died.
What a great plan.
Yeah, it was. He's like, that king is, you know, he's wild. Let's see what he does. I'll hide behind a wall and I'll shoot him.
So those were our 6 battles and 1 murder.
Yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Let's go on to 547.
Yeah, 547. I kind of did this. I did a little help from my AI friend. You ask AI a question, doesn't know anything. Then you find one, it gives you one little thing. It goes, well, tell me more about this. And it goes, oh, I'll give you some more about that. I'm going to do it this way for 547. There was an assassination in Wei. Well, a guy named Ning Zi, he murdered his ruler. So there was political instability there. There was also a revolt in Qi, but probably because of all the, you know, what we know with Queasy and all that. So we know there was a revolt going on there. There was an execution in Song, which I'll tell you a little more about. They executed the heir son. His name was Kuo, C-U-O. Chu and some allies invaded Zheng. There was Sai. It's actually, I think, pronounced Sai, C-A-I. Chen, and they invaded Zheng. Remember last year, there was Zheng was invading. So they're just back and forth over there. So I asked if he knows any, do you know any more details of this execution in Song? Yes, it told me it found it for me. Background of it is, so the eldest son of the Duke of Song, so there was a bunch of stuff going on here, and there's this eunuch, and he was the head of the eunuchs, and another one of these eunuchs gone wild. And this guy, Kuo, C-U-O, he's their main guy here. Let's call him Kuo. So he's like his master. Maybe when he was young, he was like his main eunuch. And Kuo didn't like him, but he was still like, I guess, his master eunuch. So this eunuch guy, he orchestrated a scheme to accuse Kuo of an insurrection. And he got some animal blood for a fake covenant. I guess they signed in blood and stuff. Fake covenant. And created a setup that, you know, falsely implicated him in a conspiracy against the Duke of Song, who was his father. Not the eunuch's father, of course, it's Kuo Guy's father. So when the Duke of Song found this evidence, and he consulted his wife and some other ministers, and they both falsely confirmed the plot, and they imprisoned Kuo. So to prove his innocence, this Kuo, he thought he could be saved by his brother Zuo, Z-U-O, and he sent him to intercede. However, this other minister prevented him from reaching the Duke in time to tell him. So realizing his predicament, of course, Kuo strangled himself. And then it was later discovered that he was not guilty of the charges against him. And in response to this revelation, the eunuch was boiled by the Duke.
Harsh.
Harsh. So after Kuo's death, his brother, the one who couldn't get to him on time, he was just declared the successor.
Good outcome for him.
I know. I like how the chat GPT ends it. This incident is a testament to the complex interplay of personal vendettas, political intrigue, and manipulation that characterized the ruling elite's interactions during the spring and autumn period in China. I'm like, no shit. I don't know if the singularity is still too near, right? But that was pretty helpful.
I think we'll have to wait a while for the singularity.
We still have to wait, yeah. That is the same story. So that finishes us with 547. So because the 546 is different. So we've had battles since 549, 548, 547, and I'm pretty back in the 550s, we were having battles like tit for tat every month, right? So now we're in 546. That's right. So what happens in 546 is important. And it's funny, too. And I mentioned the last episode, like, how it's hard to find some of this stuff. So I was looking at it. I found a little bit on it, and I found a little bit about this conference, and I kind of knew it had happened, but then I couldn't find anything about it. So I sent to my friend Jack in China, and I said, could you know anything about this? Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 links he sends me, all in Chinese. And thank God for Google Translate. It translates it. So now we have this information, and it's super important.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's a peace conference now.
The Great Peace Conference of 546 BC.
Yes, and I'm going to give you the background on it because I probably kind of missed a bit, so it's important I do it. We might have talked about it, but I know one of them I definitely missed. So I'll just try to sum it up a little. And this is helping us to get our China stuff in line here. It's called an Annihilation Conference. The first Annihilation Conference was back in 589.
Why is it called that? It sounds like the Wannsee Conference.
It's to not annihilate yourself, basically.
Okay.
I think it was also annihilating your enemies. Not your enemies, your armies. Like getting rid of your armies.
Okay, so it's not the final solution.
Yeah, no, it's nothing like that. Yeah, so they had one back in 586. Because what's going on is, and you know, like I said, we've mentioned it. So Chu is strong in the south, but Jin is always a little bit stronger. But they're not, you know, you can't just constantly go to war. So Chu can never quite beat Jin. But then Jin has Qi on the one side and Qin on the other side. If you were looking at me, I did it wrong with my fingers, but now I'm crossing them. So it's kind of like Germany in World War II. It has those things. Plus, Jin always has internal things, you know, internal problems because they are so strong. And so they wanted to have a peace conference. So Chu and Jin had this peace conference back in 586. The covenant was Chu and Jin will no longer fight each other, share their likes and dislikes, and the country will be sympathetic to disasters and prepare for disasters. So that's pretty interesting, right?
Yeah, that didn't work, did it?
I know, I don't remember peace either. But the kind of interesting about that is that how, like you said about the floods, and then we had a fire. You know, it just seems like kind of all the same culture, right? They're kind of all, some people, the ministers at least, speak the same languages. And then, you know, but they're sort of separate states. But then there's a flood, and who's supposed to take care of what? So you can see that they're trying to, like, you know, be human beings and, like, work this stuff out.
Well, at least they are trying.
Yeah, they definitely are. And that was also, I don't know if I, yeah, so that was, I might have even mentioned at the time, I remember we'll say like they did a covenant at the gate of the Song dynasty or the Song state. So Song, who's always getting their butts kicked and being in the middle battlegrounds for this stuff, and is also an old state, you know, dignified ancient state. They played the peacemaker in this one back in 586, and they're going to be the peacemaker in 546 too. So they're sort of like, you know how like countries get in the middle of, like the Israel war now, some country will start to help negotiations, that kind of thing. So, but it didn't play out like you said, because in 576, we had that battle of Yanling. That was a big battle. Chu was defeated, but Jin didn't take advantage of that because they had internal problems. There was people were getting killing each other and all that stuff. So we're back to this one. I'm going to come and bring us back now to 546.
And we talked about the Battle of Yanling in episode 167.
That is right.
In the 570s.
We did. Battle of Yanling. And no, Chen Pu was the one with the tiger skins on the chariots. Yeah, I don't remember what Yanling was in tiger skins. So, okay, we're back in 546. This new conference, again, Song, the ruler of Song, he wanted to, you know, the small, medium-sized countries in the central plains to have this truth. So he formed an alliance, and there was a total of 14 states that were invited to this conference. Because here's what's funny, too, about these Chinese translations. I wonder if it's a thing in China. Like, it's the whole article, and I translate it. It just literally translates it, so it's not very easy to read. But it repeats itself. It'll, like, do two paragraphs and then repeat itself just a little different. So I'm not sure if that's a thing that they do in China. Like, did they just, you know, reiterate it or what? But it confuses me. So anyway, because of all these wars, as we've seen, they decided that all the states would pay tribute, or basically taxes, you could say, to both Jin and Chu, except Qi was a significant ally of Jin, so they were not required to pay tribute to Chu, and Qin was also a strong ally of Chu, so they were not obliged to pay tribute to Jin.
Seems fair.
Yeah, it seems fair.
Did it work?
So what it seems to, well, it's funny. We're going to talk about, well, I'll just save it. We'll spoil until the next year. But it basically did work. It says, we learned that, so what happens is now that the small countries are going to start to bear heavy taxes from Jin and Chu. What happens in the end, you know, what people think about it, historians think, is that they sacrifice the interests of small countries and they receive a temporary reconciliation. They'd kind of divided the hegemony. And this is the end of the Ba system. There's no more of that. So now basically Jin and Chu agreed to share hegemony.
It seems quite clever.
It was. It definitely helped. But I think there's also intrigue going on, because what we're going to find out about is that the struggle for hegemony now is going to shift from the central plains down to the southeast, where it's Chu, Wu, and another state. It's Yue. I'll find out how to pronounce it next time. Chu, Wu, and Ye, that's where we're going to start seeing. And there is going to be basically peace in the central plains. There was going to still be wars, but it's going to be down there. In about 506, there's a big-ass battle. There's some big stuff goes on down in Chu. So that's a preview, I'll tell you. But I'm going to talk about it again a little bit in this China episode, actually, because we have another character to introduce that may or may not have been in that battle in 506. But basically, yeah, all this battling in the central plains, they're exhausted. They come up with this peace treaty in 546. Song, you know, was the intermediary, and they sort of changed the, you know, they sort of changed the system.
Well done.
Yes. Not bad at all. To finish off the year 546, we have a little bit of an eclipse. It says on the 7th of October, it was visible in Lu in the morning. So yeah, we had this big peace conference. I'm going to put the links in there. And basically, Jin and Chu just agreed to stop, you know, let's chill out a little bit. We're going to move into 545 now. And the Duke is getting old. This is interesting. I didn't even highlight this, but I see it here now. In the Duke's 28th year in spring, there was no ice. Huh. Interesting.
So, climate change.
That's good or bad. But this year, 545, and honestly, it doesn't hardly even matter. The king died. The king of Zhou. The Zhou king dies.
Well, that's...
In the past, you know, if you look up Chinese history, you'll keep seeing, like, when the king dies and stuff. But the king is literally, at this point, like, who cares? And then the Viscount of Chu, he dies this year, too. Oh, I pulled up a little story. I just thought it was funny. I don't even remember what happens in it, because it's one of those gets long. But I just like the beginning of it. I'll read it. King Feng... Qing Feng of Qi was fond of hunting and drinking. He gave over the government to his son, Qing Shi, and then removed with his harem and valuables to the house of Lu Pu Pai. What a name, Lu Pu Pai, with whom he drank, and they exchanged wives at the same time. For several days together, the great officers would have to go there as he held his court in it. Ha!
So Lu Pu Pai has a big swingish party with his buddy and a lot of wine.
Yes.
And that's where the king went.
Listen, if you ever open a swingers club, you should call it Lu Pu Pai.
That would be very historic. It would
be Lu Pu Pai's house of fun. Oh, man.
Lu Pu Pai's house of wife swapping.
Exactly. I asked that the names are just different. I asked Jack... I said, do you have trouble with the names, like the Chinese names? But he told me, and it makes sense. He said, the first time I read a foreign novel, I couldn't keep up with it. So because they're just so different. If it said like, well, you know, Joe did this and John did that. And, you know, this guy, Tom the elder, Tom the younger, we would get it. But when it's like Lu Pu Pai and King Shi Feng, it's like those names are just so different. But yeah, I like the wife swapping and drinking.
So now we have peace. And wife swapping and drinking. Sounds great.
Yeah, things are going great. And then we're going to come into the year 544, and there's no war. No war is going to be in this year. And guess who's born?
Somebody who's really into war.
Yes. Sun Tzu. Poet, author of the book The Art of War, sometimes called The Ancient Art of War.
Welcome, Sun Tzu.
Welcome, Sun Tzu, to the podcast. We had a lot of famous people in the 500s, especially in the East, even, right? We had Confucius, Lao Tzu, Sun Tzu, Buddha.
And now we have the full team from epic rap battles, Western philosophers versus Eastern philosophers.
Yes, we
Sun Tzu is the final piece.
Oh, Sun Tzu is the final piece. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So here's one of his quotes. We're not going to do his every time, but Sun Tzu, it's very popular. He's still written. I was listening to it last night again. I've read this book. Have you read it?
Yes, I bought it when I was like 19.
Yeah, me too. I read it when I was like 19. Yeah, I think so. There was a video game, The Art of War. It was pretty cool. I actually looked it up and watched it. It was really interesting. It told you how, like, you know, pressure points and stuff. It was simple. It was from the 90s or the 80s, actually. Anyway, here's a good quote. If you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the result of 100 battles. If you know yourself but not the enemy, for every victory gained, you will also suffer a defeat. If you know neither the enemy nor yourself, you will succumb in every battle.
That checks out.
Right. Know, pick your battles, know your fight. This other one, he says, the greatest victory is that which requires no battle.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
He's very big on spies, intelligence, scouts. Intelligence meaning like psyops, you know, diplomacy. It's also very Taoist, which is why a lot of its scholars, even in China, like in the 11th century or the 1100s anyway, like a long time, they've kind of thought this Sun Tzu guy might not be a real person. Maybe he is, maybe he didn't write this book. His birth name was actually Sun Wu, and outside of his family, he was known by his courtesy name of Chanqing. And the name Sun Tzu, which is used, we know him as, is an honorific name, which means Master Sun. So this SOB has three names.
Of course he does.
I was kind of thinking this, though. We kind of do, too, in some ways. Like, my real name is Bernard. Right? But people call me Bernie. And is your real name Daniel, or what's your real?
No, my real name is Dan.
Oh, Dan, okay.
Which is rare, actually. Most people in Sweden are named Daniel.
Right.
I am then called Dan.
Right. So I think that's kind of it. Like, you know, there may be some of that stuff. My daughter's Gracie, but her name really is Gracie, but some people would be Grace. So we could look at it that way. But it's easy for us to say, like, Gracie, Grace, Bernie, you know, Bernard, Dan. Yep. So you hear like Sun Tzu, Sun Wu, that gets confusing. Anyway, so there's this, I don't know if I ever mentioned him. His name is Sima Quan, Q-I-A-N. He's from the Han Dynasty, and he's like the grand historian of China. He's like the main ancient historian.
Is he Chinese Herodotus?
Yeah, I was going to say that. Not as exciting necessarily, but yeah, he's got his fun stuff in there, I guess. I haven't really read it, but he's referenced a lot. It's, you know, so he says that he is a minister of the king Helu, which is H-E-L-U with an umlaut over the U, two dots. So King Helu of Wu, and they date him from 544 to 496. A lot of them, they think that it sounds more like the Warring States period because of some of the military tactics, some of the weapons. And he also had a descendant who wrote another book on military, and his name was Sun Bin. But he's also referred to as Sun Tzu sometimes. And a lot of historians think that they were the same. But this must have been a big discovery at the time. In 1972, they found this Sun Bin's work. Like, they found it. So there was an actual Sun Bin and a Sun Zhu, or Sun Wu, as his original name was. And they were somewhat related. So we could talk a little more. I just want to tell you the story about Sun Zhu. Have you ever heard this one?
I think I have.
Yeah, this is kind of famous. So we'll tell everybody else, too. So the king of Wu, before he hired Sun Zhu, he wanted to test his skills. And commanded him to train a harem of 180 concubines into soldiers. So Sun Zhu divided them into two companies. He appointed the two most favorite concubines as each company commander. Then Sun Zhu first ordered the concubines. He ordered them to face right. They all giggled. So Sun Zhu said to the king that the general, meaning him, is responsible for ensuring that the soldiers understand the commands given to him. That's the general's job. And then he repeated the command. And again, the girls all giggled. So then he ordered the execution of the king's two favorite concubines to the king's protests. Then Sun Tzu said to the king, he said, if a general's soldiers understood their commands but did not obey, it's the fault of the officers. He said, once a general is appointed, it's his duty to carry out the mission, even if the king protested. So after both concubines were killed, new officers were chosen to replace them, and not surprisingly, both companies performed their maneuvers flawlessly.
And that's what happens when you take your 180 concubines and try to make them into soldiers.
I know. What do you think? I don't know. It's like, I don't believe that. I don't think that's really a true story.
It sounds very flavorful.
It's flavorful, but so macabre. I mean, how do you, like, let's just say, like, how would you do it? Do you, like, okay, this is basically one of my favorite girlfriends here, and they're all friends. Do you call the executioner must know them, just comes in and cuts their head off? God. Like I said before, his historicity has been doubted since, like, the 1100s. Because, like, well, in 506, there's going to be a big, big, big battle, and this would have been the time he's the general there, and Sima Qin, I'm probably killing his name, he says he's there. It was at that battle, but we've been going through these annals and the commentaries and his name, and we see a lot of names, and his name is not listed at all. I think that I believe what some historians feel, that it's very likely that he did exist and he did serve as a general, and he quite possibly probably even wrote the core of the art of war. You know, there's some disparity between large-scale battles and these battles from the spring and autumn period, but some of them were small, but I bet some of them were kind of big. It could be argued, they say, that, you know, his teachings were probably taught to different generations in his family, or maybe even just a small group of, like, officers and disciples, which eventually included the other guy, Sun Bin, and then they, you know, kind of finished it. So I don't find that hard to believe. I just don't think that he was necessarily, all the stories are true, but there's probably was a Sun Tzu guy, and he probably did write some of a book.
Yeah, he could very well have been in the Battle of 506.
Yeah.
Under a different name.
Not unusual. That would not be out of the question. So that's Sun Tzu. Okay, so we're going to end this here, and we're going to come back to a third episode on China. We're just going to wrap up. We're going to see. We have a peace treaty. We have the ultimate warrior born during a year where there is no war. Let's see if there's any war, how this peace treaty holds up in the rest of the 540s in China.
And we do not intend to have three episodes in China every decade.
No.
It is just this decade.
Just this decade, I think. Yeah, because maybe there'll be no war. I wanted to get us caught up again.
Check out our Facebook.
Please.
Check out our Patreon. And now we also have this Fan of History Plus thing. Using Fan of History Plus, there is a link in the show notes. You can access the first 80 plus episodes that we removed from the main feed. You can also get ad-free episodes. And then I'm talking about all the episodes in the show. No ads whatsoever.
Wow. $4 isn't bad. It's a cup of coffee.
And of course, you also support us.
That's nice.
So check out Fan of History Plus if you're not a patron at Patreon, because you probably should not have both.
Okay.
Okay, you're free to have both, but yes, that will be costly.
You can just send me money.
Yeah, give us your bank account. Your credit card number would be
we'll be fine.
But speak to you next time.
Yeah, talk next time, Dan. Cheers.
Cheers.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just $1 an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.